Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa on this Wednesday, January 1st, 2025. Some residents of Malakal town in Upper Nile State say they want to see changes in 2025.
We want the whole outgroup, the Tumaini initiative, to go back home so that we have one united South Sudan. We don't want any other rebel group to remain out in South Sudan coming next year.
And South Sudanese living abroad say stability is the only solution to the country's crisis.
As for us who are in Uganda, others in Kenya, because we are not in Juba, but we are all understanding what is taking place in Juba. Let them calm down and at least return to God and give us peace in South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. In Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal, some displaced people hope to return home in 2025, while other residents hope the new year brings long overdue government salaries. For VOA News, Mamer Abraham Kwot reports from Malakal.
Last year, the government of Upper Nile State said displaced people living in the United Nations Protection of Civilians sites near Malakal would be out by June, but for most, that didn't happen. Some residents of the site say they are hopeful that 2025 is the year for them to return home. Some already are beginning to renovate their businesses and homes in preparations for a voluntary return after fleeing the area's ethnic conflict in 2013. Gabriel James is a journalist living in Malakal's Protection of Civilians site and says some internally displaced persons will return home this month.
People are preparing for the new year. Those who have lain in Imatar are preparing to come out for the census in Imatar. And everybody is hoping that in new year, 2025, people are ready to come back to their houses in Malakal. Some of people are planning to do new work.
Other Malakal residents hope 2025 brings them their salaries. The war in Sudan has blocked South Sudan's oil exports, leaving the government financially strapped, and civil servants haven't been paid for a year. The National Ministry of Finance said last week it had released 1 month of salary of civil servants, but some government employees in Malakal town tell VOA they haven't yet received their allotment. 25-year-old Ayur Kong Yeh is one of those civil servants.
It's against human labor that you make somebody work for you and you don't pay that person on time. It would be against human rights. My expectation can be that things shall improve by at least sorting the workers with their daily wages or maybe their weekly wages on time so that they can catch up with their consuming status that can improve the self-life and all this. I also have to put in context the kind of cholera that have come all along. If people are not financially stable, the intensity of the health deterioration initially just keep increasing every now and then.
23-year-old Kwalmoyut Luet, another Malakal resident, says he hopes in the new year the government will invest in young adults. He hopes the state government will open public schools and vocational training centers to encourage people to avoid joining gangs.
Some of them, they could not afford private schools. They did not go to school. But if the government schools are renovated, teachers are recruited, these youth who are disturbing us right now as a gang, we can handle them in such manner. I can also urge the government to renovate vocational training centers where youth can be trained so that they can find jobs within.
The Upper Nile State government has not yet disclosed its budget and spending plans for the year 2025. For VOA News, I am Amer Abraham Kwot, reporting from the Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
I'm James Roy Majok from United States, Bantu Town, South Sudan. I, VOA News South Sudan, in Focus program. This is a New Year message. I give my special song to VOA News South Sudan, in Focus, journalists, especially John Tanza, Neville Biagio, Karan Dams, as well as others journalists whom I didn't mention their name.
Some South Sudanese living in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, say they expect 2025 to be better than 2024. Many of them say they think the next year will foster growth and improve quality of life for South Sudanese, both at home and in the diaspora. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor reports from Nairobi.
Machech Kao Machech, a South Sudanese living in Nairobi, says he hopes that 2025 will bring economic growth and new opportunities in his country. He says he faces challenges in Kenya, including funding for studies and basic living expenses.
For us here in Kenya, the economic challenges which are there in our country and all over the world have also affected us here. We are trying to mobilize funds, but funds are not coming. Things are very tight, and reaching 2025, as a Christian, we hope maybe things may change economic-wise, and then things will be better. Some of our guardians who are in South Sudan, if we call them now, it's hard for them to pick the calls because they know we want something from them.
Emmanuel Magai, who came to Kenya to study, says he expects 2025 to be a turning point for his country.
What I would like our country to be, you know, it is bad we stay outside the country. And the problem is, one, insecurity. Second thing is all about, like, the way corruption it is. I would like the government to give out the job opportunities. The second thing is, we have a lot of NGOs, and we also have a lot of banks with that foreigners bank. We need them to employ the citizen of the country. Because this one of great miss, because we cannot be foreigners in our own country. We want this bank to give out the loans for the citizen to get the benefit from there. So I wish everyone in our country to know that home is always home. Even though how bad it is, your home will always remain as your home.
After South Sudan's civil war began in 2013, millions of the country's people fled across borders. Kenya hosts many of these refugees, many of whom are seeking asylum in the United States, Canada, or Australia. James Deng Mayeg, another resident of Nairobi, says he expects significant changes in South Sudan and an orderly return of those who have been displaced.
The country we want country to be remain peaceful, and we expect the good thing to happen coming here. Like, we want the whole outgroup, the Tumaini initiative, to go back home, okay, so that we have one united South Sudan. We don't want any other rebel group to remain out in South Sudan, okay, coming next year.
Nairobi resident Nicholas Mangong Majak expects peace, economic improvement, stability, development, and opportunities in 2025, fostering a brighter future for the country.
We hope that 2025 will be a year of the peace in the country, and also we are hoping that things will change anyway. This economic crisis, we urge every South Sudanese to keep hoping that things will change, and we also urge our government to make sure that the security in the country should be maintained, and also to urge the local communities to work hard. Everyone should work hard in order to cooperate with the government, so that the security would be settled, and we hope next year will be a year of peace in the country.
Many years of conflict have shattered the hopes of South Sudanese in the country and the diaspora. Many who have taken refuge in the neighboring countries say the hope for a better South Sudan has not faded. For many, 2025 might bring change. For VOA News, William Sande Mabor, Nairobi, Kenya.
South Sudanese living in Uganda say they will not return home if the government of South Sudan is taking its time to fix insecurity, economy, and the lack of services in the country. Our reporter Kaltuma Vanessa spoke to refugees and students in Uganda about their wish for 2025.
As for us who are in Uganda, others in Kenya, because we are not in Juba, but we are all understanding what is taking place in Juba. Let them come down and at least repent to God and give us peace in South Sudan.
Fatoma Helen Richard from Pagrenya Refugee Settlement. Government of South Sudan is peace and create peace among those people. How to be together, share ideas together, so I can see that those things can bring peace in South Sudan too.
The reason behind all what is happening there is that there is lack of proper food security. There are no agricultural centers in there which the government has set up. The proper ones where you can find out there are big farms which is for the government, which can aid the country in case of anything, which can produce food, which can produce goods for the country so that it will be in a way that it is very cheap.
I'm Paul Ben, I stay in Entebbe. The first one, I think they should strengthen security. Strengthening security is critical in every country. The government of South Sudan works to train and equip security forces. It will protect all. Because right now, if you look at South Sudan communities are not all protected fairly. Some are protected good, some are not protected, you know, having attacks from rebels. So if the government of South Sudan can focus on strengthening security, that will be a good way to bring in peace in 2025. And then I think secondly is by improving dialogues between communities. You see, most of the leaders from different ethnic groups at times don't get to share their concerns.
My name is Ruth Agala. I'm a student. I've recently completed my bachelor's degree in public health. Bringing peace to South Sudan requires very many multidisciplinary approach. And according to me, there are several areas. First of all, they should hold dialogue and reconciliation, because there is a saying that goes, a problem shared is a problem solved. So when you hold dialogue between different stakeholders at the national levels, the local levels, trying to get to know their problems, we shall come with strategies in order to solve them. And in a way that, in that way, it can help us to what? To bring peace to South Sudan. So that's the first way, holding dialogues and reconciliation. Another one can also be through the implementation of peace agreements. The government should try to implement a peace agreement, because I believe that for peace to reign, we have to be united and we have to love each other. So if there is a peace agreement that has been implemented, I believe that by time to come, South Sudan will be a peaceful country. Then also, another one also I can also put by also improving on the economic development of South Sudan. That's the reason as to why we're actually here in Uganda, because our economy is not well developed. So the government can try maybe to invest on infrastructure. They can also try to invest on the health facility or the health sector, also on education. So once all these things are put in place, of course, it will bring stability in the country.
I'm called Viola Susan Morris. I like the government to let the government provide for them even jobs and people who are passing people on the road. It can let them guide themselves and solve the guide people who are the rebels in South Sudan there. They guide them, they bring them peace, let them be, understand themselves. Because they don't have something to do, that's why they are attacking people on the road. They are doing their problems. Even the leaders can be together and to guide them and talk to them. Though that one can bring peace.
Those are voices of South Sudanese expressing their wish for 2025. Our reporter Kaltuma Vanessa collected the audio. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, more than 10 African countries will be broke in 2025. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands, that is craft work, making the baskets and doing more of the clay at work.
So I think I will go technology any day, anytime. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers. So for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing, because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice. So I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
Hello, VOA South Sudan and Pocas. This is Peterson from Kajukeji County of Central Equatorial State. I would like to wish a happy new year to all VOA presenters. Thanks a lot for always keeping us updated all the time. Let God bless you guys and continue giving us more updates on what's happening in Africa and across the globe. God bless you all. Thanks so much.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Entering 2025, at least 20 African countries are bankrupt or at high risk of defaulting on debt repayment. That's according to global financial institutions. The reasons, economists say, include COVID-19 pandemic, global conflicts, soaring inflation, climate change, and corruption. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
A recent United Nations report unpacks how Africa's debt challenges are retarding its development, preventing it from spending adequately on health, education, and infrastructure. The World Bank says Africa's external debt has climbed to more than $650 billion, and debt servicing costs reached nearly $90 billion in 2024. In 2025, according to the bank, the continent will be expected to pay almost $100 billion to external creditors, including the International Monetary Fund, the United States, France, and Germany, and private lenders spread across the globe. Then there's China, by far the biggest holder of African debt. The UN says the continent owes China's public and private lenders around $85 billion. Angola alone, it says, owes Chinese lenders $21 billion, with Kenya and Ethiopia each owing China almost $7 billion. UN Development Program Chief Economist Raymond Gilpin says African countries pay more to borrow because ratings agencies label them high risk, often without proper analysis.
When this is not done, the cost to African countries in terms of higher interest rates and also in terms of lower development financing inflows for the 19 countries we surveyed came up to about $74 billion. That's more than the total amount of aid that African countries receive on an annual basis. You look at the interest rates that African countries, some of the poorest in the world, pay about 12% on average, while the developed world interest rate is about 3%. Today, over 700 million Africans live in countries that pay more in terms of debt servicing than they pay in terms of investing in health and education. Bottom line here is that countries that could afford it less are paying much more, and that doesn't seem right.
Gilpin was speaking at a live virtual event at Oxford University earlier this month. At the same event, Cameroonian financier Alain Nkonchu said African countries cannot afford to repay loans at the exorbitant interest rates international lenders demand.
We are now having, and we had, some default that actually happened. You have Zambia, you have Ghana, more or less Ethiopia on the brink, and this is the dynamic within which we are now. And the question has been for most of the country the ability to roll over that debt as opposed to basically defaulting. The NEPSOC has gone to a level where we understand that the ability to withstand the shock is pretty limited, as you can see. And yet,
in 2020, Zambia became the first African country to declare itself bankrupt. Mali said it was insolvent in 2022 and remains unable to service a large part of its debt. Also in 2022, Ghana came close to bankruptcy and still owes creditors $45 billion. Other countries that will struggle to make payments in 2025, according to global financial institutions, include Angola, Chad, Ethiopia, Malawi, Mozambique, and Kenya. Gilpin says Africa's cycle of underdevelopment will continue unless the international financial structure is reformed. These reforms, he suggests, must enable multilateral development banks to offer long-term predictable financing at affordable rates to African nations. The UN says Africa is currently marginalized in global financial decision-making. This should be partly addressed, it says, by giving the continent stronger voting rights at institutions such as the IMF. The UN also proposes that African countries pay debt at reduced rates and that in some cases debt be written off. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Hi, Voice of America. I'm Kenyiwani David from Terkeka County, South Sudan. My special wishes goes to James Batty, John Tanza, and entire presenters of Voice of America. Merry Christmas and prosperous New Year. God bless America. Thank you.
Hello, BOA. This is Maboral and Rango Nyirumbe. The year has come to an end tonight. I would want to extend my New Year wishes to my black friends across the country, the likes of Jacob Dior Mochweng in Yerul, Madin Malwala Long in Juba, Mala Adam Mal in Washington, D.C., Goja Nyang Majungdul in Bor, not forgetting the veteran journalist Manil Wugal in Uganda. My sincerely greeting go to you wherever you are. I'm also sending my New Year wishes to the BOA Black family, the likes of John Tanza, Nabil Biagio, engineers, and all those who are working to make this program to exist. My sincerely New Year wishes go to you wherever you are. I'm also sending my greetings to my Black family, my Madam Teresa Yong Meyuen, my son Rengu Jr., my Black mother Teresa Nyula Menyel. My sincerely greeting goes to you.
In September 2024, the U.S. military completed its withdrawal from Niger, where it had two bases that helped partners in the Sahel counterterrorism. The pullout came after members of the Niger's military staged a coup in 2023. The U.S. military says the withdrawal had had a major impact on efforts to fight terrorism in the region. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babs has more.
With the U.S. military now out of Niger, defense officials say their presence in West Africa has dropped from about 1,000 troops at this time last year to fewer than 300 today. U.S. Major General Kenneth Ekman led the withdrawal of U.S. forces who were helping counter violent extremist organizations, or VEOs, in the Sahel.
If there was one country that was most important on our ability to address Sahelian VEO problems or the Sahelian VEO challenge, it was Niger. It is a strategic setback with regards to how each of us pursues our security objectives in the region.
Military analyst Bill Raggio says the already dire terrorism in West Africa is worsening.
The jihadists have been on the march. In some countries, it's stunning. For instance, Burkina Faso. It's admitted that about 40% of the country is under control of Al-Qaeda's branch there.
He says that without a major base to host troops and surveillance drones, U.S. and French counter-terror missions in West Africa are in bad shape. Without the Western support that existed before the junta ousted the democratically elected government, Niger has failed to hold back a rising terrorist tide. The Nigerian military says terror attacks earlier in December killed at least 39 people, including children, near the border with Burkina Faso.
In Niger, violent extremist attacks have become more lethal. That's a fact since the coup on 26 July 2023. They've got fewer resources and fewer partners.
But officials say the withdrawal doesn't mean the U.S. military is giving up on West Africa. Instead, it's resetting its efforts.
This is the nascent stages of our reset.
General Michael Langley, the head of U.S. Africa Command, told VOA in October he aims to build a new footprint to help fight the region's growing terror threat.
We pulled out of Niger, but we are engaging with coastal West African countries because if we look at the what direction is metastasized on the northern regions of Cote d'Ivoire, of Ghana, and Togo and Benin.
Ekman says that requires a different approach.
If our presence in Niger allowed us to go inside out relative to the Sahelian-based BEO threat, we now have to revert to going outside in. Countries like Cote d'Ivoire, Ghana, Benin, Chad, our access to them and the degree to which they want to partner with us will influence how we go outside in.
And General Langley says negotiations to work with those governments will take time.
We're still in stages of defining what that host government at their higher levels of what they do want from us to be able to complete that solution set to effectively account terrorism.
As deliberations continue, more and more terrorists are threatening the very governments whom analysts say have pushed away the countries that might be able to help them. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. I'm Daniel Arak Michael in Yereba County, Central Equatoria State, South Sudan. I'm very happy to have reached 2025. This is a long-awaited year that has been succumbed with a lot of struggle that has been making us very difficult to reach. Once again, I want to thank and send out my greetings to each and every family of VOA in and around South Sudan. That happy and prosperous New Year 2025 to each and every one of us.
That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday, January 1st, 2025. We wish you a happy New Year. We now leave you with Lokasa Yambongo featuring Samangwana and the song Bonane, which means Happy New Year. Listening to Lokasa Yambongo featuring Samangwana and the song Bonane. I'm your host John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our team producer Mokbeli Yabaro and our engineer, we wish you a happy new year. Join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.